It's only three verses, but in those three verses, there is contained a whole host of searching, hoping, calling, wondering. From this fourth chapter of Ephesians, we get just a very small window of some very deep concerns related to how you and I do life, how we get along with one another, how we see one another, and how we interact with the world. It doesn't just start with this passage. It doesn't just start with the church in Ephesus. It's a part of the long journey, even beginning with the Hebrew people, moving from captivity in Egypt through the waters of the Red Sea in the direction of the Promised Land. This quest, this journey of life and faith and wonder and questions. It continues in the middle of the Bible with what we call our wisdom literature. If you've ever explored Ecclesiastes or Proverbs or the Psalms or Job, this middle portion of our Bible is filled with fascinating questions focused really on this journey of life. Sometimes we assume the Psalms are praises, and often in the sanctuary or in Fresh Start, we read or proclaim Psalms that are joyful and offer praise. But fully a third of the Psalms are what we call Psalms of Lament. They take very seriously the difficulties, the struggles of life. Ecclesiastes, also in wisdom literature, asks a lot of hard questions, wondering, what is it really all about? What are we supposed to be doing? How are we supposed to live now? And Job, if you read through Job carefully, you see here a very important parable of faith and grief and wondering, what do we do now? It is asking the hard questions of, what is God really like? Who am I really in the broader questions of life and faith? And so we come to this New Testament church in Ephesus where there is a struggle, apparently, that Paul is seeking to address. People asking these questions, giving different answers, disagreeing with one another, and needing to hear a word of unity and peace. And folded into that word of unity and peace are these two important words, humility and gentleness. If you read carefully, it is a church that is experiencing some level of conflict. And when you experience conflict, there are people on both sides of the issue who think they're smarter than people on the other side of the issue. And the words humility and gentleness become incredibly important in a fellowship where people think they're better than other people. And yet we acknowledge humility and gentleness in our world, and in that world, then, is not always as easy as we would like to believe. I learned this early in my ministry. I had the pleasure of being taught by one of my parishioners, as happens a lot in my church life. I have these people who emerge as gentle, quiet, humble teachers who, in so many words, say, "Preacher, you're going to get it right one of these days." One of those was Eva Taylor in Rockingham, First Baptist Church of Rockingham. And Eva and Edna were sisters. They lived together, had lived together some 20 years after both of their husbands had passed away. And they were just delightful. My visits with them were always filled with humor and love and stories. And Eva and Edna would tell me these stories. One of them I remember Edna was driving their car. It was a 1974 Dodge Monaco. It was about 15 feet wide, a huge trunk, this giant of a car, and they were driving through downtown Rockingham, Edna behind the steering wheel, and stopped at a stop sign, and all of a sudden the motor died. They couldn't go anywhere. Well, downtown Rockingham is a two-lane highway that goes through the middle of downtown, and if you can call Rockingham downtown, it was the best restaurant in town, they told me. We'll take you to the best restaurant. After we finished eating at Shoney's, we went back to the church. Rockingham, the downtown, there wasn't a way to get around the Ark, is what they called this Dodge Monaco. And so there Edna is sitting behind the wheel, and this red pickup pulls up behind them. He can't get around. Their car's coming from the other direction. He starts to honk. Well, Edna sits there. She's continuing to try to start the engine. Nothing's happening. We've all been there before. It just increases the stress. This does no good when somebody's honking. So Edna's sitting there, and in humility and gentleness, she gets out, walks back to this guy, makes him roll down the window, and she says, "If you'll go up there and fix my car, I'll sit back here and honk your horn." So humility and gentleness sometimes can be overridden by a sense of humor, strategically placed. So Edna and Eva were my teachers, but they also shared with me the depth and breadth and wisdom of faith. They, like this passage in Paul, had a background. They had a story, a journey to tell. And like with Ephesians, there's a preceding passage. It's helpful for me to recognize what lies behind this imperative of make these bonds of peace, be humble and gentle, find your calling, be worthy of your calling. And what lies behind is very helpful for me. It's in the third chapter of Ephesians, right before this one. And listen to these words. "I pray that you may have the power to comprehend with all the saints that is the breadth and length and height and depth, to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." If you can absorb those words, you get a sense, we can get a sense, that there's a much larger picture and story that lies behind a call to unity and a hope for humility and gentleness. To discover our calling first is to do like the great composer of How Great Thou Art, to stand in humble adoration. To lack the words and yet somehow put them with the music of life. And say, "I can't fully express this, but let me try. How great thou art." In awesome wonder. The love that lies behind the imperative is always valuable to remember. We can't fully explain it. Paul even says, you know what, you need a lot of power just to comprehend it. So my prayer for you is that you have the power to just begin to have an inkling of the breadth and length and height and depth of love of Christ. Just to get an inkling. This is my prayer for you, so that you can do a better job and discover your calling. Be worthy of your calling. Not because of how great you are, but how great thou art. And the love that has the breadth and length and height and depth that we cannot put into words. Walter Brueggemann, as many of you know, is one of my favorite Old Testament theologians. He has a beautiful book called Biblical Evangelism, Biblical Perspectives on Evangelism. And Brueggemann's perspective, in the biblical perspectives on evangelism, is if we begin to get this right, there should be three responses in the worthiness of our callings and our attempt at humility and gentleness as we express the gospel message. The word evangelism, first, is simply, it's a word that in some ways has been co-opted, sadly, in our time and place, in negative ways, but it is a rich, beautiful word we need to take back. It simply means gospel. It means good news. It was in Greek, evangelion. It was simply the message of Jesus. It was what the early church framed as the proclamation on a street corner that God has done something new in our lives that changes everything. This was the evangelion, the good news. And Brueggemann's perspective, biblical perspectives on evangelism, is this. If we can get this right, if we can just start comprehending the breadth and length and height and depth of God's love, we come to these three responses. The first is, outsiders are welcomed as insiders. Forgetters become rememberers. And beloved children become beliefful adults. Listen again. Outsiders become insiders. Forgetters become rememberers, and beloved children become beliefful adults. The struggle in Ephesus is the struggle in every church, and that is, insiders enjoy being insiders more than welcoming outsiders to become insiders. And the struggle that we've got to do to overcome the struggle that insiders have in staying insiders is helping all of us as insiders recognize the power of the gospel message to those who would give anything to be able to be welcomed in a fellowship that is open and caring and loving, where people remember your name and care when you're not there and welcome you back when you return. What a powerful gift that is, and so often it is easy to become a forgetter of that power. So to welcome folks as insiders, to help everyone feel they are important and beautiful and loved, is a vital beginning place in the expression of the power of the breadth and length and height and breadth of God's love. And forgetters become rememberers. Another one of my heroes, another one of my teachers, was Rich Crouch. He was a guy in my church, in Twin Brook Baptist Church in Rockville, Maryland, who one time we were out together for breakfast with a group of fellows. We call this our Romeo group. It stood for Retired Old Men Eating Out. So we were having breakfast together, and this was a cool group of guys, and we're sitting around, and one of the guys says to Rich, and everyone in this group, these were all veterans of World War II, and one of these guys says to Rich, "Rich, tell the preacher how you pulled yourself up from your bootstraps." Well, it turns out Rich Crouch had come from a home where his father left the family when he was an infant. He was raised by a single mom with a couple of other brothers and sisters in dire poverty in the South. They struggled every day just to have enough food on the table. But there were some folks along the way that cared for him, and he ended up, after the war, becoming a cartographer, started his own business, and by the time I was his pastor, he was a multimillionaire. Tell the preacher how you pulled yourself up from your bootstraps, one of the guys said. And Rich looked at him and he said, there's no such thing as pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. He said, I had a mom that did not give up on me. I had a first grade teacher that pushed me forward and helped me understand the power of reading. I had a preacher who kept seeing something in me I couldn't see in myself. I had a coach that moved me forward through basketball and football and showed me the power of teamwork. I had a sergeant that yelled at me and screamed at me but made me a better man. I had officers who promoted me. I had a GI Bill that gave me all kinds of skills when I got out of the service. And I stand before you not having pulled up by my own bootstraps, but standing on the shoulders of giants that came before me and helped me. And I can never forget where I come from and who has made me what I am today. Now let's finish our pancakes. It was over breakfast when we were saying all this. How easy it is to assume we have done this all ourselves. That this beautiful place just emerged because of our great wisdom and fortitude. That all this is about us. And Walter Brueggemann, pulling out of the wisdom of the scriptures, said, this is where forgetters need to be made rememberers. This is where we have to help one another remember where we came from, to remember the breadth and length and height and depth of God's love. It is not about what we have done, but what God has done for us. And therefore, we stand in awesome wonder and say, I can't believe this is for me, but because it is, I got to share it. Amen. And therefore, beloved children, Brueggemann says, are made belief-full adults. The natural biblical perspective on evangelism becomes the next generation of our believers come from this generation of believers helping us, learning, teaching, loving, giving, sharing. Another one of my heroes was Dot Nash. My mother, by the way, is here today. And raise your hand, Mom, so everybody can see you. And she knows this story well. Dot Nash was our hero when we were at Signal Mountain Baptist Church, where my father was pastor. Dot Nash, at that time, I imagine, was in her late 70s. She had lost most of her sight. She wore huge, thick glasses. And her husband, Walter Nash, they would arrive about an hour, hour and a half before Sunday school on Sunday morning. Together, they taught the first grade Sunday school class. And they would arrive very early, even before we as the preacher's family would get over to the church. Dot and Walter, I remember Walter Nash leading her by the elbow across the parking lot, helping her see where she was going, moving her into that little Sunday school class where the first graders were taught. And she would pull out a little phonograph record player, for those who don't remember, records with those big black things with grooves in them. And you put a needle on there. The word groovy comes from you put the needle in the groove. And it makes cool sounds. This was a record. And she would put records as the children would arrive, the first graders. There would be this beautiful music playing about God's love for children. She would sit with the Bible open in her lap. She couldn't see the words anymore, but she knew the stories. And she would tell about God's love. She would talk about the awesome wonder of being a part of this family of faith. She would help make these beloved children become belief-full adults. As we look back on her, we may not remember so much the words she said, but we saw the life she lived. She became an evangelist of good news and gospel hope and message. the small inkling of power that she had to comprehend, the breadth and length and height and depth of God's love, allowed her, in spite of all kinds of difficulties, to be able to continue to live out a life of humility and gentleness, worthy of the calling that she had experienced to just simply be who she was and share her story and the story with beloved children who would carry on the message to the next generation. It is an amazing opportunity you and I have, in awesome wonder, to respond to this love we can't fully put into words, yet we can experience in powerful ways. So much so that to give it away doesn't mean we lose it. It actually multiplies. It fills us further. It makes us better. It revives our spirits. It allows us to see more clearly the world that God has for us. So as we meditate quietly, as Eve sings for us the reprise of this song she sang a moment ago, with eyes closed and hearts open, let us hear again the power of these words as we listen carefully.
I am a servant getting ready for my part. There's been a change, a rearrangement in my heart. At last I'm learning there's no returning once I start. To live's a privilege, to love is such an art, and I need your help to start. Oh, please purify my heart, I am your servant.
Let us be worthy of our callings. With humility and gentleness, let us respond to this amazing grace and incredible love that God shares with us. We have the opportunity together to offer ourselves in God's service. Let us do so. And as you experience the movement of God in your heart and spirit, if you would like to express that publicly, openly with us, we will be waiting here at the front for you. If you feel God's calling simply to work with our children or our adults or helping in any other way, let that be a part of your journey as well. Let us stand together as we sing our hymn of response.